level of pain in life, that is a blessing. It's just that when circumstances are still happening, we do not see it that way. But then you look back and realize that it happened for my good. There's a quote that says that nothing happened to us, it happens through us and for us.
Pushed by the fact that you don't want the poverty that you come from. You know, you sort of mentioned it, being raised by a single mother was very tough. All I literally wanted to do was just to be able to help out, right? That's all. And it's been able to grow from there, you know. And I think for me, it's great now to be able to say she's fully taken care of, because she really played a big part in taking care of me.
After everything, are you kidding? After everything I had to go through, from the thousands and thousands and thousands of lectures from my parents on some, you're doing this wrong, you're doing that wrong, fix this, fix that, to the sitting down with yourself and saying, do I really want to do this and carrying on with it, to driving miles and miles and miles and miles to get this, that, guys. More about that part of your journey. So when my dad then was grown up, started working, he had to start his own family and decided that he will take me from my grandmother. I was already 18 at that time, moved in with my dad and my stepmom. The conditions did not become very favorable. Taking into acceptance that I was a teenager, I might have been also doing my own teenage stage wrongs and so forth, but not dwelling much on then what happened. I found myself, hence I said in the beginning, there is a level of pain in life that is a blessing. It's just that when circumstances are still happening, we do not see it that way. But then you look back and realize that it happened for my good. There's a quote that says that nothing happened to us, it happens through us and for us. So whatever circumstances happened, I think, as I said, I wrote my matric at the age of 17. Literally the next year in March, that's when I was out of home, out of the circumstances that happened. And beside blaming anyone else who did what and who did what, I look at it as a blessing. As I've said, I grew up in a consecutive family, in a consecutive home, raised in a Christian family. Somehow my life was small. Somehow my dreams was shrinked and was small. Everything about me would have been controlled. But having been out of home at that age made me to be streetwise, made me to see the world outside of that little small world that I saw. I think if had I been at home all my life, or maybe my dad would have decided which school I go to and which career I should follow, and the child that I was, you know what, I would have just literally followed everything that my dad said, because I grew up being a consecutive person. The elders speak, you listen, and you do as they say. But being out of home at that age made me to go in life with this aggressiveness, having to stand up for myself, having to make decisions. If I make the bad decisions, I need to bear the results of those decisions. It made me bold. It brought me from that shell of being raised by a praying grandmother in a small village. So everything is small. You must take life easy. But then having been alone out there in the world broke a certain character in me, not in a bad way, but to know that this is the world. There are times when you need to push. There are times when you need to step into stones. There are times when you need to go aggressively on things. Yeah. So that was a blessing for me, even though at that part, apologies, it did not look like that. Whenever training happens, God usually trains us with the future in mind of the roles that we need to occupy and the people that we need to be. So that training, as painful as it was necessary. They say that if you bleed rather more in training, you bleed less in the field. That is the part that build resilience. That is the part that builds character. That is the part that builds discipline. Because if you do not do it, if you do not do it right, it's on you, and there is no mother or dad who will come and pick you up and make it right for you.
18-hour, 20-hour days, all you should be living on. But you're also pushed by the fact that you don't want the poverty that you come from. You know, you sort of mentioned it, being raised by a single mother was very tough. All I literally wanted to do was just to be able to help out, right? That's all. And it's been able to grow from there, you know. And I think for me, it's great now to be able to say she's fully taken care of, because she really played a big part in taking care of me. And I think also being raised by a single mother, you know, it just says to me, being a dad of two boys, be very present, be very intentional, and be very committed. And it's a lifelong journey.
Mm. And being able to say, I'm going to follow this dream no matter what, takes a lot of audacity. Yeah. I'm just imagining you in Tembisa, in the township, falling into hard times. You're in high school. You have to leave high school to go to like some sort of tech school to get some skills. And you still had to have the audacity to go to high school and say, I'm going to provide you with your Machik jackets. I'm going to turn my mother's garage into an internet cafe and it's going to work. And more than that, I'm going to spend 7 years making no money and still fight for this job. It is the audacity for me. Yeah. Like, the Yiddish will call it chutzpah, right? Like, you're going to just go for it and have that extreme confidence in your idea. And I believe the extreme confidence in yourself, that if I'm going to bet on anything or anybody, I'm betting on myself. And I'm going to keep on improving every single day. What would you say influenced that mindset for you to say, listen, I'm audacious and I'm going to just go for it?
So for me, it's also what influenced that is what actually got me to start thinking about entrepreneurship. So one Friday, a gentleman by the name of Hector Mdau, who was a presenter, entrepreneur, I think then was Radio Bob and the Sword Kaya, something like that, who came to my church during youth service. And he was talking about how go out there, there's more to the world than Tembisa. In my head, I'm thinking, more to the world than Tembisa? The world is Tembisa. What is this guy talking about, right? Because you've sort of assimilated your dreams around, if I can get myself a four-roomed house, I get myself a partner, we'll have one kid, we've got a car to move around, great, but that'll be our place to call home, and then I get myself a 325i BMW, I'm sorted. That's my life in a nutshell, right? But when he said that, I held on to those words for some reason. Then I found myself a couple of weeks later on, you know, getting on a taxi. I'd go to your Wimpy. Then tea, rooibos was around 3 rand. I'd get newspaper. I'd go sit there I'd go sit there for a couple of hours. But the specific one I used to go to was the one in Pretoria, because when you'd get onto a taxi going to Pretoria, there was a Mercedes-Benz dealer. As you enter Pretoria, you can't enter Pretoria without passing that dealership. So I'd get off there, go to the dealer. I'd spend a couple of hours there, and I used to always tell this guy, this is my car. That car at the time was a CLS, right? And I think those are some of the things that got me, that jocked me, that got me to a place where I got to expose myself to stuff. You know, there's a wise gentleman who says, I think it was Dr. Marco from Regenesis, says, we stop businesses according to the level of our education. You know, so I sort of take it a step further and say, according to the level of our education and level of our exposure, whether the exposure is red exposure, it's traveled exposure, it's you being able to hang out in the right circles where people are able to drive you into thinking. So it makes sense 17 years ago that when I started, it started as an internet cafe, because that's what all I was exposed to. So it was an internet cafe, it was a hair salon, it was a car wash, it was a tuck shop. And I could only choose between these because that's all I was exposed to. But what he then spoke about then got me in a position where I pushed myself out there to then say, let me expose myself to more, right? So that then was the amazing advice that got me to where I am. And he said, no, don't stay where you are. Watch the car next door. Get that 5 rand or 10 rand, get onto a taxi, go sit in town and see what rich or...
So that you learn about what people like and what people don't like. Yeah. But to make matters worse for you, the business you started, still working on it, 2019, boom.
Oh!
2020.
Anzila, when I say I've been tested in this world, I have been tested. And you know, things started going really well. And so now, Sunbeds opens. Sunbeds Arena opens. Ah, listen, guys. Fully booked every weekend. I was booked in the Easter in April. The whole of April. Before even April got there. So in March already, I was saying, guys, I'm sorry. Fully booked. Guess what happens? As things were popping off. As things were going. And guys, Eh, kilo ngwanyana o la ka kwae kwae ka beke ka ship ki. Ask me. COVID hit, and the first sector to get hit was the hospitality sector. We had to shut down. We had people coming from Mpumalanga. We had people booking us from Durban. We had people booking us from Cape Town. We had people booking us from all over. Sorry.
That's all right.
From everywhere. And we had to stop because flights stopped. People couldn't travel anymore. And that was it.
So COVID-19 hits and we are just starting to gain momentum.
Mm-hmm.
And everything is shut down. I can only imagine the pain that you felt. Can you take me back to the week or that month where you knew this business is not going to work anymore and I'm basically screwed?
Like, Ancilla, you can only imagine. I probably hit my financial targets like a month prior to COVID hitting. That's when the business now started picking up. Girl is making money. I'm paying bills. I'm paying people. I'm paying this. I'm fixing this. And then that happens. And, you know, I had a moment and I said, after everything, are you kidding? After everything I had to go through, from the thousands and thousands and thousands of lectures from my parents on some, you're doing this wrong, you're doing that wrong, fix this, fix that, to sitting down with yourself and saying, do I really want to do this and carrying on with it, to driving miles and miles and miles and miles to get this, that. Guys, I was carrying cement in my car, Matoma Mutim. And then this happens, until I was down. And so I said, this has to be a joke. It must be a nightmare. That was probably my worst nightmare that I didn't even dream about. I didn't even foresee it coming. I thought maybe a mirror was going to break and I have to fix that. This would break and I have to fix that. But to shut down the whole business? Mind you, you still have to pay bond on this house. You still have to pay water on this house. You still have to pay electricity on this house. I hired staff. And everything is shut down. Oh, and so that was the end for me. It was, I think, mentally I was down. I think I probably had a good depressive moment there for myself. And there was just nothing I could do.
Yeah. What was the worst of it all when you think back during that time and you got to that depressive state? Can you take me back to that moment and what you were feeling and what happened? Mm-hmm. That's
I knew that it wasn't my fault, and I knew there was nothing I could do to open it. I just had to get to a point where I was like, I can't operate, everything has to be shut down. Okay, how much do I have? Check my sense there. I don't have enough to even keep the staff there. So that was probably, even just thinking back to it, I was defeated, and I think defeated is just not even it. I was sleeping the whole day. I didn't want anything anymore. You'd call me, ask me about the guest house, I'll probably, hey, why not? Probably just go at you. It was disappointing. I've already taken money from people who've done bookings even prior to COVID. I had to give back that money. I had to promise them that, yo, listen, this is going to end. You know, it's going to end. I'm going to give it back to you. Oh, you know what? You just pick another date, different date. And you just come and roll up and, you know, rock. I couldn't. I had to give back the money. I had to let go of my staff. I had to sell whatever could sell at the property. From beds to covers to you name it, whatever I could get my hands on to sell from there, I just had to sell it. But I still had a little bit of hope that, you know what, we can still. But then the electricity bills started coming in. Remember when COVID was shut down, your rent still had to be paid, your waters had still, everything still had to be paid. So every little thing that I had, I just kept paying electricity, waters, whatever little I had, but eventually we just closed down and that was it.
So how do you then pick yourself up from that moment where you can't even get out of bed.
Mm.
But you pick yourself up so much that you can start dancing.
Because
dance is joyful. It feels like such a big jump that would have taken a lot of strength for you to be able to make.
And dance is what saved my life. Dance and fitness is what saved my life in that point. You can only imagine, because I've already like planned my entire future around this business, and it failed. But being the person that I am and being raised the way I was raised with such grit and a warrior spirit, I was like, nah, what's the next best thing? Let's go. What's going on? So now I'm on internet. Everybody's working out. Guys, during COVID, everybody was gymming at home, guys.
Because remember, that's what can save your life.
Serious.
Your lungs must open up, walk, exercise.
Everyone was buying. Yeah. And then I did my research. Guys, the one thing about me, I will Google and I will YouTube. I'm just there. What are people doing right now? And this was just before TikTok just like really blew up. Right, so this was just like YouTube. Everyone's just complaining, which guys, every second person now is in the gym. I was like, instead of complaining about it, you must find, you know. And I was like, listen, I'm already a fitness bunny, so let's go. Like, what do you mean? Treadmill, gym every day. And then I started my Herbalife journey, right? And I was like, you know what? They've been trying to convince me my whole life. Now they've got me, because I really need to make a plan. So I, you know, went into, you know, Herbalife. And then I did a young snippet, right, of myself in there, because we've got like a young treadmill there and just like a couple of dumbbells. And then, you know, after one session, I just started, you know, dancing, because I was just feeling it, you know. And I would never post stuff like that, but that day I just posted it. And I see like everybody just say, yo, this is fire. This is, I'm a piano, you know. And I said, I need money. How can I gain money from this? The same way I said, how can I gain money from doing fitness? How can I make money from dancing? Bada bing, bada bong, YouTube.
Eating. Normally, you need to be uncomfortable, or things need to go so wrong. And sometimes you even need to be scared that you're going to lose everything that you worked for, or you're going to lose part of your dreams for you to be able to pivot. At what point in your life did you truly understand the meaning of pivot? Can you take me back to that time where you experienced something and you're like, okay, Rebecca, this is the time to pivot?
Oh yeah, that was 2019 2020. There was a situation where I collaborated my brand with someone, and they kind of like didn't approach it with the same values as me, and kind of sort of hijacked everything to a point where I was devastated, because I thought, okay, I'm the vision lady. I should have envisioned this happening. I should have done my due diligence, risk awareness. But it came to a point where I felt like I didn't know who I was anymore, obviously with my brand. And I remember someone just saying to me, Rebecca, you are the brand. You know, remember you know, and that's something I coach and teach and facilitate on when it comes to personal branding, to say you are the, no one else is you. Mm-hmm. And so there, it was just reinventing myself, number one. And that allowed me to just say, put the same strategies that I give others to myself, to say, okay, have a vision. And so I had to now re-envision myself to say, okay, how do you rise up from a place of failure, or even to a point where you're almost erased, who you are is almost wants to be erased by somebody else. Mm-hmm. And you just rewrite the story, and you write a new story, and you dream a new dream. Mm-hmm. And I think that for me, and then also being allowing certain people in your space, that also helped me to pivot again, being surrounded by brave people, people who tell the truth to your life. Mm-hmm. And people who actually will give grace to you. And people also who will challenge you to say, you know what, you're not going to feel sorry for yourself. But also self-reflection was another way that I pivoted as well, where I had to be accountable for my mistakes, whether they were honest, innocent, or naive. And I was oblivious and I didn't know something. So I also had to pivot in those situations by just learning more about myself and how not to do something. Yeah. But I think out of pivoting, you morph into something better. And just as Maya Angelou says, when you know better, you do better, right?
Yeah.
So I think then you don't sit and wallow in the pity party. So I think that was one of the most significant moments where I had failed completely and I had to pick myself up and keep at it. But boy, can I say, it's when you get up and you become unstoppable, you just have such a different fire and passion and a zeal where you say, you know what, I'm going to do the work that I was sent on this planet Earth to do. I'm on a mission and I'm going to make that impact as long as I got breath in my lungs.
Yeah, for sure. You know, but it takes a lot of courage to be able to do that, because sometimes when you're down and out, you feel like you'd rather just give up. What's the point? I could do something that could be easier. Maybe let me just work in this one place and forget all of those things.
Right.
Is there a point in your childhood specifically where you can point out and say, this is where this kind of seed was planted, and it's manifesting itself in how I deal with situations now as an adult?
I think my mom, you know, watching my mom, you know, navigate life, being a mom to 7 children, and as a child, you know, when she lost, you know, some of the children, you know, passed away, and having to bury your own children. I'm from 7 siblings, now we're 4. And just seeing how she was brave enough to travel, go to sell things, you know, she would knit winter clothes or jerseys and sweaters, and then travel to other countries, sell them, come back and, you know, buy us certain clothes, like, you know, Christmas wise, you know, would dress up. So for me, I saw that entrepreneurial spirit and mindset where she could have said, you know, I'm a housewife and there's nothing I can do. And I always remember there was a time when my dad left his corporate job, and now he was like starting as an entrepreneur. And one of the things he decided to do was fix refrigerators. And I remember my mom sitting next to him and working on a compressor, like rebuilding a compressor for a refrigerator. And that for me was just like, that is like a resilient woman who is just saying, whatever I can get my hands to do, I'm going to do it. And she's a great gardener. So she makes, you know, she plants vegetables and she can sell to the neighbors. So I think that for me, as growing up, I could just see a woman who was not feeling sorry for herself. Yes, she went through challenges, but should always find something to do with her hands, with where she was, with what she had. And I think that has taken away every excuse to say, oh, I don't have the money, I don't have the resources. She always says, okay, what do I have right now? I have a passport, I've got some goods, I'm going to sell, and then I'm going to buy. So I think that has always allowed me to just be resourceful.
And that's absolutely incredible, because a lot of our character is built in those early formative years. But as we grow and evolve, if those characters were not groomed at a young age, it's our responsibility as adults now to develop them, because we can't be blaming our parents forever, right? There's a point in time where you it's a cut-off date.
Exactly.
You can't blame your parents anymore.
Absolutely.
You're either adult and you need to take care of your own vision and ensure that you build the kind of life that you want. Imagine, though, the anxiety at the time. Were you anxious at all? Like, is this the right decision? Am I going to make it, or have I totally lost my mind? Is there like any sort of doubt that was creeping in?
Oh, it was clocking me. It was skyrocketing. Naturally, I do suffer from anxiety. So making big decisions is so tough when you suffer from anxiety. And I'm a person who knows that the consequences of my actions lie with me. I'm not someone who shifts blame. So can you imagine how hard that was, knowing that, oh, if this does not work out, it's completely on me. I remember my best friend asking me, it's like, are you sure? Because my best friend comes from a family of, everyone in their family is a graduate. And I was doing the same degree. And he's like, are you sure you know what you're doing? Are you like, and I think it maybe in his head, he might have thought, I just want to come to Joburg and be swallowed by the life of the glitz and glam. And, you know, he just didn't think I could make a career out of, he just didn't know what was playing in my mind. He thought, I just want to go to Joburg and just be a socialite. And it's like, are you sure you know what you're doing? And it's like, I don't know, maybe stop talking to me like that.
Yeah. And I think also that anxiety would come with, there isn't a lot of super successful stylists per se that we know and have seen, at least for me, a normal person in day-to-day, where I could go and say, oh, the stylist, and they did this, and they made this. And, you know, there's designers here and there, you can see the work. But even with the designers, you're like, yeah, are you sure? So I think it's because we don't have enough representation, which is why I think what you're doing is so critical and why I wanted you to be able to sit here, because we shouldn't be thinking that there's no possibilities with such careers. There are possibilities. We just need champions to come and show us how it can all be done. And you are daring. I think that's the word I would use. You are daring to say, I've not seen it at this level, luckily, but I'm going to do it anyway.
And I had not even seen it, hey?
Yeah.
Like, I had never met a stylist when I decided.
Of training and self-belief and understanding who I am and really what I want to share. Mm. What would young Talifani in Lewis Chichard think of the Talifani sitting in Joburg today? Did you know this was who you were going to be? Did you have people back then who believed in you?
I had visions of that is going to happen, but not in this way, because now it's becoming bigger than I thought. But I can't say that people believed in me. You wouldn't see me in the room. I'm quiet, and I'm just observing. And if there was someone that you would want to clean this house, it's me. You know what I mean? I'm a nobody in that room. But I'm also aware of what's going on, and I'm the only one who seemed to know what's going on. Why I'm saying that is I started working very early. I used to stay in a town, a small town, but I worked in a farm. I worked at Spare. I worked in people's gardens. I was just working. And that's what took me out of the street. You don't have a history of me doing anything because I was not there. And either I'm doing that or I'm in the library and learning. But you wouldn't pick me as one of those guys who are going to be. I'm coming from a good family, and I always say it. I've got good siblings who are very much educated and working well. They would be picked for what I do now. It wouldn't be me. But for that young child, I think they can hear me. They can hear what I'm saying, and they are rumbling, you know, and they are boiling. But from where I'm coming from, it's a far-fetched dream. You don't think this way. You think to be a doctor or an accountant or a lawyer. You don't think this. I mean, people think enough to become successful for themselves. I'm thinking big enough to be successful as a community. And beyond community, I'm thinking continental. And somebody's thinking, it's just here. No, I'm already in 5 countries and we're moving. Spaza Eats is here, but it's already, we're talking in Uganda, you know? And it's beyond just what it is. And sometimes it will take time to understand the whole full picture.
Would you say you were invisible or you felt invisible when you were younger?
I didn't feel invisible. I was powerful inside. I don't have a problem with myself. I'm confident.
You were invisible to others.
Yes.
Not to
I was invisible to, and it goes to show how far people can see. People are limited to what they know and what they're exposed to. So you can be in the room and powerful, and people will still not realize you are the one. That's what I learned. But I've been confident.
How were you able to keep that visibility alive to say, the people in the rooms that I'm in might not see me, but I'm here and I've got something to share with the world?
I think it helped me to keep pushing myself because I thought I had something missing. These people have something that I do not have. And because of that, it also protected me from everything else because there were so many shots, so many things that were coming. They were not coming to me. So I would say the people around me, they were shielding me, and I appreciate them. Because what I've done and what I'm doing, nobody would have expected me to be doing it, which is good, because if there was any fire that was going to come, it was not going to come to me. So I appreciate the people who were shielding me.
Mm.
Yeah.
You know, when you're talking about your childhood and your inner voice being so loud when you were young, even when you were spaces where people would pick you for cleaning and not for greater things. Mm. But your voice was so young. And I find that when we are young, our voices are very young but very loud.
Yes.
And you can hear yourself think. There's such conviction in yourself and who you are over and above the externalities that you face.
Yeah.
How have you been able to keep that young, loud voice alive that doesn't listen to external factors?
It helped me to depend on myself. What I'm doing, I truly, truly believe in myself beyond anybody else in the room.
But how? How do you get to that point of
true belief?
Belief in yourself, even when everybody else around you doesn't see it, doesn't get it, doesn't understand it, doesn't even believe you can do it.
So because of all of that, it becomes your home, right? You become, your natural habitat is you believing in you because nobody else does. So you start living in your thoughts and your mind. You applaud yourself. Nobody applauds you in that room. They applaud everyone else. And for you to exist, you have to be confident enough to believe in you beyond words. That's why I'm saying, like, I can be saying this, but it doesn't affect me that people don't believe me. I don't feel anything because where I'm coming from, do you think, like, you know, what I'm doing now, somebody had to say, you can do it. No. Mm-hmm. I strongly, strongly believe in what I am and what I can do, even beyond words, beyond clapping.
It's often said that doing your best today, even when you're at your worst, prepares you for a tomorrow that is actually the best, right? So you do your best even when things are dark and things are tough. How would you advise people who are not aware that they've got self-work that needs to happen for them to be able to thrive, to go about doing that self-work? Because it's not easy. I say so because recently I had a friend of mine who's going through a couple of challenges and, you know, suicidal and et cetera, because of challenges. And when we have this kind of conversations, we can pinpoint where the problems are, but it's just difficult for him to start. Mm. They even know it. They've written it for over 2 years. They've been writing all of those things down, but just getting started and being able to find themselves in that journey of healing and self-improvement is just something that doesn't seem to happen. How does one actually do it?
Sure. I would say self-awareness is a good place. You can feel pain. It can also hurt to be aware, right?
Embarrassing even to yourself.
Yeah, you can also feel shame, you know. You can feel a lot of self-consciousness in that regard. But self-awareness is really a good place because if you know where you are, then you know where you need to improve. And then you start to do the work. I think the best thing I would say is probably reach out for support. You don't have to do everything on your own. You don't have to know everything because I think there's a generation of people that think we have to know everything, right? If I don't know, then it's embarrassing, which is not the truth. If you don't know, that means you can learn. If you can learn, that means you can grow. So I would say really seek the support for the different areas where you have, you know, the inner work to do. So if it's a leadership coach, get a leadership coach. If it's a life coach, get a life coach. If it's a therapist, get a therapist. And really unpack and be specific about the areas where you need to work on yourself. I think the inner work never stops. And I think one of the things that really shame us is thinking you're the only person that's going through a tough time. You're the only person that's probably feeling suicidal. Mm-hmm. You're the only person that is feeling incapable of doing something. You're the only person who has trauma. There are many of us, right? We don't all post them on social media, but there are many of us that have been in hard places. You're not the only one to be there. And you're not going to be the last one to stay there as well. Like in the sense that you're going to be able to pull yourself out of there. Mm-hmm. But it does take work. It's okay to give yourself grace when you're on a journey where you don't know what it's supposed to look like. And be kind to yourself as you're doing the inner work because you're not going to get it right all the time. You're going to fall many times. And that's just how we learn as humans. And I would invite anybody listening to this podcast to say, go back to the time when you're in your childhood. Mm-hmm. When you're learning to ride a bike, how many times did you fall? Mm-hmm. When you're learning to walk, how many times did you fall? But nobody beat you up then, right? They just, you know, celebrated you and told you, hey, baby, keep going, right? You have to be that to yourself as an adult. felt.
Yeah.
You have to motivate yourself and speak life into yourself and be kind to yourself in your inner thoughts. And the world is a harsh enough place. Mm. We should not be hard on ourselves because there's so much that we go through already as individuals. So when you're dealing with yourself, be kind and gentle with yourself and give yourself grace. That's what I would say to anybody doing the inner work, and get the right support for the right areas.
Yeah.
It's not everybody's going to be able to support you in your journey. So speak to professionals if you can afford it. If you cannot, there are also free establishments that offer certain services. There's places where you can get leadership coaching for free, programs. Mm-hmm. Find them.
It's more than just growing up in the orphanage. There was a time where someone had claimed to be my biological aunt. So I was taken out of the orphanage and had to go and stay with her. And we lived in such poverty in a shack. It was, you know, in my farm. Yeah, we lived in a shack. It was one of those that have your long drop outside. And the conditions were just appalling. And I remember telling myself at a very young age that this is not my life. This is not my portion. And that I'm going to work and make sure that I don't ever end up in this situation, that if I one day start a family, that they would never end up in this situation, even if I wasn't around. And I've been hustling since then. So I started working at like 14 years old, taught myself how to do hair and started working in a hair salon. And since then, it's just always been, how can I make money? How does money work? So I had jobs when I was younger, but then quickly found out that I'm not the type to work for someone else. I have my own goals. And since then, I've just been on the entrepreneurial game.
Yeah, that's absolutely incredible. And you talk about growing up in an orphanage, and I know that it was not all rosy, although you were well taken care of. And in your book, you talk about how the leaders or your parents in the orphanage lied to you and said you had HIV when you didn't. Yes. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So that part of my life is something that I only brought to light now, having experienced it and found out the truth about it over like 8 years ago. But I was obviously in the orphanage. They one day called me back home from school early and said they had something very important to tell me, and they told me that I was born HIV positive. I then lived my entire high school life as someone who was HIV positive, very low self-esteem, very low, let me just use the word ambition. Like, I just didn't feel like there was a point, because I'm not going to live that long. Or I also didn't believe I was going to find love. So I was just not in a great space at all. And only when I left the orphanage and was now independent and went to the hospital for myself did I find out that I was not actually HIV positive at all.
It's crazy.
It is quite crazy. But you kind of just have to forgive. You really do, if you want better for yourself. And it's very cliche, and people will always say that forgiveness is the key to your peace. But recently when I came back to SA, and I've been staying with my friend and we've been doing Bible studies, we've been doing a study that focuses heavily on forgiveness. And I saw for the first time that the reason why my life hasn't been going so well was because I was holding so much unforgiveness in my heart, rightfully so. But I chose to let all of that go, and the grass has becoming greener.
What unforgiveness were you holding?
My list is so long. The last page of my book, I write a list of every single person who has wronged me in some sort of way, or that I feel hurt about something, big or small. And I wrote that list because I really did want to let it go. I wasn't taught how to communicate the best in the orphanage, because there's so many kids, and there's only so many house mothers, and they're not going to teach you things that your mother would normally teach you, like how to express your feelings and say, I've wronged you in this way, I've wronged you in that way. And as a result, I just would hold things in. So someone could have done something as big as that, or someone could have done something as small as maybe just not, or disappointing me in some sort of way. And I held almost the same sort of like resentment for each person, because I could never bring it I could never find it in myself to sit down and say, you know what, you hurt me in this sort of way, or you did this, or you know what I mean? So I was just holding a lot of people in. My sister was in there for not being a bigger sister. I've always felt like I had to be the older one. I had to be the parent. And I felt really let down by that. But I didn't communicate that to her, and so I was holding her in my heart's prison and suffering because of it.
And what's your relationship with your sister like now?
In my heart, I've forgiven her. So I now have space to be able to open up a relationship with her. It's still a process. I checked up on her once since the decision to forgive everyone. But it's kind of like now we have to introduce ourselves to each other. Hi, I'm Q. Hi, I'm Spe. And start all over again. But there hasn't been a relationship for years.